Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Phil Larson on the line, and he's Executive Director of the Solem Community Transformation Initiative. Phil, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a great opportunity to be here today.
All right. For everybody watching this, this is a very special episode. So excited to bring Phil into our author community and also to introduce him to our audience. Phil has been selected to be one of our upcoming authors in one of our upcoming books, which I'm really excited. And just so you know, today we're going to give you some teasers and we're going to talk a little bit about Phil, what Phil's going to put in the book, but we're not going to give it all to you. So we're going to bring Phil back on the show again and after the book is published, and also obviously give you an opportunity to purchase the book. Why? Because we sell books. So excited to bring Phil's content to you. But just to get us kicked off, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all, with our Mission Matters Minute. So, Phil, we at Mission Matters amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Phil, what mission matters to you?
Biggest mission that matters to me today is kind of twofold. One is to encourage people to live their life mission. Don't delay that. Get involved in that thing that's inside of your heart, beyond the money, beyond the stuff. What's that life mission that drives you? And for me, that's fixing fractured families. That's getting into the non-metro and rural community and giving individuals an opportunity to have a better life forward. That's my focused life mission.
It's great. Love bringing mission-based individuals on the show to share why they do what they do, you know, how they do it, and really how they aim to make a difference in the lives of others. So great stuff there. And we'll definitely do a deep dive into Solem and how you're really helping fix fractured families. But first, I want to go back, maybe take a couple steps back. Like, so how did you get started on this path, like to what you're doing today?
Well, let's see if we can do that succinctly, right? I had always had a focus, and I've worked in community and been a corporate fixer. That's just what kind of I've done my whole career. Get a company that's broken, a department that's broken, go in, get it calibrated back on mission, doing what it's supposed to do, people, the processes. So I've always been a fixer, but I noticed in community, our families are just incredibly fractured. You know, 42% of our kids are growing up without their father at home. 41% of kids today are born with no marriage. And the statistics that follow those two trends are horrendous in terms of poverty, in terms of crime, in terms of anxiety and depression and so many different things. So I've just had a heart to get in and help. So I was working with the National Center for Fathering. I was a full-time executive in an insurance company, but working with the National Center, gathering, you know, 100 churches, government leaders, governors, senators, whoever, we could pull together to have citywide conferences. And I kept asking the question, we're not changing the numbers. The statistics keep going down or keep going up, maybe is the way you could look at it. They keep getting worse. It's not changing. We're having all these things. We're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in big seminars and gathering all these people, but it's not changing the fracture.
I'm guessing. So as you mentioned, you know, you're a corporate guy, corporate America, like this had to be driving you crazy to see this day in and day out.
Yeah. I'm going, okay, we can fix this stuff. Come on guys. There's ways to fix things, you know, but I've seen so many companies who let things die. And
oh, for sure.
Die, and families let things die. So I had made a determination in my 50s. I said, when I get to be 65 and I get ready to retire, I'm just going to give myself to this 100%.
Wow.
Well, at 56, I went through a corporate this corporate chain hit. It wasn't one of those nice ones, okay?
Yeah.
There's nice corporate change and there's not so nice. So this was not a nice one. I just looked at it and went, gosh, I'm 56. Why not flip the number and do it now? Why not just say, okay, I've had enough of this. I'm just going to go face to face with the most broken people I can find. Because I'm a fixer, right? And I look for what I call black holes. And in the theory of constraints, you find that one thing that everything else hinges on, that just one thing causes 1,000 problems.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the streets. I'm going to go face up with this and see if I can find some one things, some black holes. Yeah. So I worked with a school that was 95% fatherless, 660 kids. You couldn't find 20 dads. I worked with those dads and listened to them and helped them. And then I worked with some recovery centers. And then a group asked me to go into the non-metro rural community and see if I could find solutions there. They came to me.
Wow.
And I went, well, okay, let's see what's there. I grew up in that community. I grew up in a town of 15,000 in a non-metro rural. So I kind of know that culture. Mm-hmm. And I found that that community is in worse shape than any other community I could find. Urban communities, the statistics of abuse and violence and crime and poverty in the non-metro rural is as high as the deepest urban Chicago or Philadelphia or New York, except there's no resources. There's no counseling agencies out there. There's no people really helping people step up and get out. There's all of the government stuff, right? There's AFDC and there's food stamps and there's housing allowance and all those things, but there's not the resources to step up and get out.
Mm-hmm.
So the county attorney came to me while I was working in this community to look for solutions and said, would you work with probationers and parolees? And I went, you're going to give me access to the most broken families in the county, right? We're going to go to the hardest situation and start there. I'm going, well, that sounds like a black hole to me.
You asked for it. Yeah.
I was looking.
You asked for it.
Presented. And, you know, Sun Tzu says opportunities multiply as they are seized. And I
right.
So I began to work face to face and adopt some evidence and research based things that I was trained in to work in the community because they told me what they were doing. And I said, well, what you're doing will result in two things. It will result in those people being pissed and poor. They're going to spend money doing what you want, but it's not going to give them any results. And now they're not going to listen to the next thing you ask them to do.
Right.
So let's shift it. Let's change it and just really get engaged. And I began to engage one-on-one. We've now graduated 750 in one rural county.
Wow.
In 8 years. That led
amazing.
To discovering some things because we needed to listen. As I put it, if you want to solve a problem, figure out who's in the middle of it, go to their curb, pull up a piece of that curb, sit down and listen. Right? Listen along and speak short. Really get deep in there and begin to listen. And I began to listen and begin to study things like Bridges Out of Poverty and the AHA process and just a myriad of different things that I already had studied and continued to study and continued to educate myself in current psychological principles and things that are going on. And I heard a voice saying, we want help. I found people who really were responsive. You know, like a friend of mine, he was one of the first one, the second group we had, 14-year meth addict.
Wow.
Number one meth cook in the county. Never went to jail for meth, went to jail for pulling guns on people and beating them up. And I didn't think we reached him. A year later, I find him. He said, I'm doing everything you encouraged me to do, and my life's getting better.
Wow.
A year later, he found me again and said, I want to work with you. And I'm going, I don't know about this. Really? I said, well, let's take a gamble. He came and for 4 years attended every session I did with other people. When they would come in, they'd go, well, that's the guy who pulled a gun on me when I was a teenager. That's the guy who sold me drugs. I crash on his
Come on, car. Phil, you can't make this up. Wow.
No, I'm going, yeah. And
this is, and for context, these are small communities. So like, this isn't a, you know, million person or multi, you know what I mean? A metro area or this is so people know each other.
Yeah, when you get into these cities, the city might have 4, 5, 6, 10,000, maybe 15,000 people in these areas. And a whole county may have 20 to 40,000 people. Mm-hmm. So everybody's other brothers, mother's cousin, uncle connects.
Yeah.
And that means that you have an opportunity, like Gladwell writes about, to be a tipping point. So if we keep touching and touching and touching, and we help this person who takes that back to their family, who takes it back to their family, pretty soon you're going to hit that what Gladwell calls the 11% marker, mm-hmm. that you've influenced the whole county, which we have done in that county. We have far surpassed that marker.
Wow.
And I've seen people who, you know, they grew up in sexual abuse from the time they were six until the time they were 12, all sorts of situations I don't want to go into that.
Yeah.
That nobody wants to know they're real, but they're very real and they're very common. You know, one out of two women in these communities is physically assaulted by age 30. Hmm. One out of two. But when I'm working with the broken families, it's one out of one. Hmm. Right? When we're talking about sexual assault with females, it's pretty much 100%. And we want to put these things to the side, but they're rampant. And they're generational abuse, generational sexual assault, generational poverty. But it just takes one person to break that generational flow, take their family and their kids out of that stream and set a new track. And we began to see that happening over and over and over just in our limited approach, just in our workshops. We began to see that. And I'm going, this is amazing. Just giving people a little hope.
Yeah.
And some tools. How do you listen to other people? How do you apologize? How do you ask for forgiveness? How do you give it? How do you respond to somebody who's angry? Those type of items began to move people out of probation. They started completing their probation at double the numbers of those who didn't go through our programs.
That's big. When you think about something that's trackable, first off, like if we just kind of get back to the business side of things, like you were looking for a measurable result to make a difference, number one, and to possibly reach in these multiple different communities, that tipping point that you mentioned from Malcolm Gladwell. So if you have this measurable result, it seems to me like, and I'm sure you can explain more on this, but the ramifications of what that means on the overall system. So not just the houses and or not just the households involved, and obviously the generation and the individuals involved, like that's the main goal. But when you think about the prison system, a lot of the other things along the chain of resources, just resources being used, like it's like things can be shifted to things that can help more. It seems like because you're solving a problem there.
Huge. Absolutely huge. And, you know, the United States is the most incarcerated nation in the world.
Yeah.
In the 1980s and the 1990s, we went into a track of incarceration that we're just beginning to edge out of. About 3 million people on any given day are in jail or prison. 4 million are on probation and parole. Now, listen to that. So we spend all these resources on the people, you know, churches, community organizations love what they call prison ministry. We're going to go into prison to help. I'm going, there's more next door than there are behind those walls. So I'm focusing on the next door neighbor. I'm focusing on the person who's right down the street from you, who is in the custody of the Department of Corrections. They're just sentenced in the community instead of sentenced inside of a building. And without change, 67% are going to recidivate and go to prison. 70% are going to fail their probation and be incarcerated. But with the right hope and the right intervention, the right approach, a lesser number, a much lesser number is going to recidivate. Some are going to recidivate. You can't reach everybody. Everybody's not going to listen.
Yeah.
Trust me. It was really important sometimes to have my friend, because when people came in, they said, that's so-and-so, we're going to leave Phil alone. So he kind of served as a bodyguard sometimes, too, because it can be intimidating. This is a person. They're not locked up. They can show up on your doorstep any time, day or night. But we just saw such a beauty happen in the community. So we were in the process of shifting to include online interactive training. And I've done the research on how to build it, how to build it correctly. And we're talking about people who don't have huge vocabularies and huge, you know, they don't have internet and computers at home. In the rural communities, internet is just getting itself established. So we were in that process, and along came the best and the worst thing that I've ever seen called COVID.
Yeah.
COVID forced the rural community to accept internet and online interaction. So everybody has a phone. They just didn't know how to use it. They use it for Facebook, but they never thought of using it for Zoom. And you and I mean, I've been in business we don't want to talk about how long, but anyway, for decades, right? Yeah. I've been doing go-to meetings and webinars,
yeah,
live and online since
Skype, the original Skype, yeah.
Before there was email. I mean, we go way back with them. So it was expensive, but you know, I couldn't fly to New York to meet with somebody for 20 minutes. We'd hook up and you'd do that. So now it's so accessible, it's nothing. There's no cost to it almost, especially to the participants.
Mm-hmm.
So it forced the hand of the rural communities to accept that. So when COVID hit, I just opened a new training center. We closed it immediately because we couldn't have anything face to face. I'm dealing with a population with low health sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
It already was dangerous. Now it's super dangerous.
Right.
And so we just had to close it and go online. Everyone else in the community shut down and just quit helping.
Mm-hmm.
We went online. We did not miss one day.
Amazing.
Some days I would be converting. It took me 12 hours to convert 1 hour of a workshop, and the workshops were 20 hours. So 240 to 300 hours of conversion time, recording things in 5 and 6 minute segments and building questions and designing it so it's interactive, just like our workshops were, but only online, was exhausting. I had people who came alongside and helped us, and it just was exhausting. And we were testing it and giving it to people 3 minutes after we built it. So talk about live pilot. You know, if you're in a business, you're going to pilot something. We were a live pilot every day, and we could adjust and adjust and adjust. So now we've gone 2 years of doing that.
Amazing.
We do a weekly Zoom, and it's discussion mode. We can talk. What's going on in your life? What's happening? And then the training happens interactive during the week on their phone. Most of them, you know, they get off work, they go to the parking lot, hook into their work internet and do it there, or go to the Walmart parking lot. I have a lot of Zoom meetings with people in their cars.
Yeah.
Because they're in the rural community, they have to find a place where they get decent data.
Mm-hmm.
So it really has worked. And I found the comprehension levels going up versus what we were doing online, which surprised me and pleased me. It meant we're doing the right thing and we're doing it in the right way. And people don't have to stop their life, go to a workshop, leave their family, go back home and miss a day or two a week of their family time to learn how to be a parent.
Yeah, this is one of the big thing, the benefits. I mean, and a lot of industries went through this, right? So we're talking about telemedicine, right? People, doctors, exactly. From both sides of the coin on that one, right? So maybe doctors that weren't always, adept to the on the same mission to make that happen quickly. So, you know, rightfully so, medical profession can move kind of slow, right? Sometimes. So now you're forced to do it, right? And we saw a lot of things could be done online and then vice versa. Other people that maybe wouldn't go into the doctor or seek healthcare when they needed it. Now there it's more accessible and the adoption rate went up on really both sides on that. So I'm curious, adoption rate or like give us some results on this, what you've been doing over the last 2 years. Like how's that been?
Well, we've had great results since I was working in one county. And that group of probation officers kept sending people. And this year, now they've adapted. They sent me more people this spring than they have sent in 5 years.
Oh, my gosh. So to say it's working.
Whoa, guys, slow down. Because at the same time.
We got another one for Phil.
At the same time, we began to talk to other non-metro counties because we had the model built. Mm. The pilot was run. The model was built. We knew what worked. We had evidence and research-based approaches. Mm-hmm. So we began to call in other non-metro counties.
Mm-hmm.
I had probation officers break down crying on the phone. They just said, nobody's ever offered to help us. We don't have anything. We've never had anything. And you're going to help? How much are you going to charge? I said, I'm not going to charge you anything. If you have some grant or something you can help us, fine. I said, otherwise... Because I believe if we will offer first, the resources will come.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Schuller, great thinker, once said, there's no lack of money. There's just lack of good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that. So I said, you know, as long as we can continue to serve, as long as my bills are paid, we will keep extending, understanding that somebody's going to come alongside and say, we like that. We want to help too. Mm-hmm. And we can keep extending. So we've extended into 6 additional counties in the last 3 months.
Wow.
In the next 10 days, I meet with representatives of the entire state of Oklahoma for community sentencing and probation and parole officers for 20 counties. And I'm just taking a breath going, okay, what is August going to look like?
I'm going to take one for you, Phil.
Well, but we're poised. Remember, I am a corporate guy.
Of course.
Also, I'm a nonprofit guy. So at one stint, I oversaw a large nonprofit, and I had 457 volunteers reporting in my structure. I had over 100 outreaches and 457 volunteers. So I know what it takes to organize that and to train people and to do the backgrounds and things that we need to do. Mm-hmm. And I brought people on board in the last couple of months to help with that.
Mm.
People who I know from 20 years of working in the community said, Phil, I want to help. So they're coming in, you know, marketers and great, intelligent people who know how to work with volunteers, other people. They're coming in and taking pieces so that I can, at my age, become Lightning McQueen, right? Ah. So the two movies, Cars 1 and Cars 3, skip 2, but Cars 1 and Cars 3, Cars 1, Doc Hudson, right? Doc Hudson coaches Lightning McQueen, and then he disappears off the scene. And in Cars 3, Lightning McQueen's aging out, and he coaches somebody else. And he takes on Doc Hudson's number 51. So my wife bought me a T-shirt that has a big 51 on it and says, you're coach now. It's built. It's running. Begin to coach and empower other people to live their life mission. Other people want to fix fractured families. Other people really believe in lifelong dads. You know, dads should be lifelong. Kids need lifelong dads. When my 40-year-old daughter and I get together, I walk up and she's got my grandkids. If I don't hug her first, she's not happy. Right? She needs her dad. When I'm around my kids, they want dad first, and then I can hug the grandkids. We need that. I'm not raising them anymore. They're my friends and they're partners in what they do. They're doing their own life mission today. But there's so many people, and they may not be pioneers, right? Nobody wants to do what I did. Trust me. I went into a community where I knew nobody, and I mean nobody, and just said, here I am. And by the grace of God, connections started happening. The county attorney came in. People started jumping alongside. People stepped in and helped back us. But, you know, I went through some months with no salary. I'll be honest. I went through 6 months with no salary whatsoever.
Wow.
You know, but I had put some things behind to say, okay, we'll take care of that. And we did. My wife and I made that agreement. She does the same kind of things with teenagers. She's in 4 different high schools and works with first offender teens and their parents for another organization. So it's our life. This is our life as a couple. We've been married 44 years. Our kids do things like this. I want to see other people get meaningfully connected to do something meaningful, not just do something, but to look out there and say, hey, this mom who came in, man, I had a mom talk to me once and I was sitting there talking to her and she just opens up. She's about 22 at the time. And at 13, her mom had gone and gotten a man, brought her into the house, him into the house and said, now you serve this man. And she had 2 kids by that man. And at 19, figured out I can get out of this and left. You have no idea how common that is. I've talked to meth cooks who tell me it's quite common in these communities for people to bring their middle school girls over for the evening and exchange that for meth. Common. The community, when you question the community, people go, oh, well, and I'm going, what do you mean? Oh, well, this is not, oh, well, this is not well at all. But if we can get to the core of broken families and help fix those fractures, those kind of things become less and less and less. Putting people in prison doesn't stop that. Mm-hmm. Punishing people doesn't stop that. Talking about it doesn't stop that. Mm-hmm. Throwing money at it surely doesn't stop it. Mm-hmm. But compassionate people taking, you know, what you and I know and have learned how to treat people, how in business community, how to listen to people, how to ask questions correctly, how to respect other people, how to work in a community that's completely unlike you. I mean, as a business person, you don't walk in a room and say, well, you're this color and you're this what. You just work with whoever's in the room.
Absolutely.
And say, okay, we're all here to get this done. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. To take those concepts into fractured families mm-hmm. so that they can apply it to their partners. Nobody's married. I can tell you out of the 750, maybe five have been married, but all have children. Mm-hmm. So by multiple partners, usually. There's a lot of fracture there, mm-hmm. but it's healable with hope. It's healable with the right application of wisdom principles. You know, there's wisdom principles written down. The oldest things that were written are wisdom principles. Mm-hmm. The oldest written books are wisdom principles. And guess what? They were right then and they're right now. Psychology today studies all those principles and says, oh, I know that was written 3,000 years ago, but we've proven that it works. And here's a practical way to apply it. So we give people practical ways to apply timeless principles to stabilize their life. And then build for the next generation. Lay that life foundation. Have safe and healthy relationships. And then have an opportunity to build a generation of greatness.
It's great. And Phil, one of the things that you mentioned here, and I know you're meeting and working with cities and counties, of course, but you mentioned, you know, resources. Like, how does a project and how does something of this magnitude get funded? And how do people get involved? Because this is a huge undertaking. I don't even know what the number is of these pockets in these communities that are out there in the United States. But I know there's quite a few. Like, how does something like this grow and scale?
You know, we're focused on 1 million households. Remember, there's 4 million on probation and parole, 25% live in a rural community. That's 1 million households. And every state has 50 to 60 rural communities, like rural counties like that.
Yeah. So there's a lot. And I think, so obviously the technology portion of it is huge to be able to connect and to be able to deliver something that maybe couldn't have been delivered before, even before COVID. Like you said, most of these communities didn't maybe adopt the technology at that point, but now technology is in place. So like the funding side of things, like that's got
we're ready. We desperately need partners. I tell people I'm never desperate because I'm always going to take the dime in my pocket and take one more step. Yeah. I don't wait on money. I just move forward. You know, I cut out there and say the money will come. And it has. There's been times it's not. But right, we're scalable. Everything we've done has been built on scalable platforms running out in the cloud. So it doesn't make a difference if I start 20 counties in the fall and I start another state in January and another state. We are completely scalable in everything we do. Our background partners, our technology partners that are providing for all of this that we build on are solid. They handle Princeton. They handle some of the biggest education groups in the world. And they are very passionate about supporting us and what we do. They give us a great discount. I wouldn't be able to do it without it. You know, we have dimes. Other people have dollars. We take our dimes and we stretch them. So we need people who say, you know, I want to help. I'm at $5,000, $10,000, $50. It'll make a difference. Who want to help. And then we need people who say, I'd love to mentor 3 people in my county. Our mentor platform, it's not a training platform as much as a mentoring platform. When I pick my phone up every day, I look and see everyone who's responded to some course somewhere on some question. I look at their answer and respond to them on my phone.
Wow.
I can take somebody in a county and say, will you be my franchise in that county? If we have 10 people in that county, you be the mentor for those 10 people online and be available if they say, well, can I have a cup of coffee, to go take them for a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. And change your community, change your county. We are completely poised to make that happen.
Wow.
That's the dream. I mean, I don't want it to be some central thing where everything's being done and Phil's doing it. We have all the training recorded. You don't have to do the training. Mm-hmm. It's been recorded. We've researched it. We've worked it. We have people who perform the training online, but you can be the mentor. You can jump in on that once a week Zoom, meet with those six people, talk to them about what they went through that last week, and then monitor what they're doing during the week and keeping track. Because, you know, most of them bust their phone about once a month. Really, a lot of burner phones. Not because they're trying to hide, but because that's just the culture. You go down to Walmart, you buy a phone. It's a cheap phone. It's not going to last. I mean, they're not going to spend $600,000-$800,000 for a phone like you and I might. Yeah. My phone is my lifeline. It's my computer.
Yeah,
I spend some money on it. I can't afford to break my phone. So I have a sizable phone, or, you know, sturdy. But they're buying something down at the counter at Walmart. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, at the Quick Stop or something. So that phone's not going to last. So it breaks the phone, and then you lose connection with them.
Right.
And then they lose all their contacts. And then 3 weeks later, they reappear and go, oh, how do I catch up? We need mentors who are encouragers, not judgmental. Right. I don't use names in any of the stories. I have stories. I read a whole book of stories called Stumbling Into Miracles. So I've seen so many lives change. But I was working with a 15-year-old young woman who beat up a police officer. And she was a tiny little thing, about 5 foot, maybe weighed 85 pounds. And she jumped a police officer. And I'm working with her. And she's just improving week after week after week. In the beginning, she didn't trust me for anything. She thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
But she began to trust me. And at the end of the workshop time, she came in with this picture. I can describe it. I don't have it on me. It's in my other office. We're in the middle of tornadoes and thunderstorms and all kinds of crazy stuff. So I'm in my alternate spot right now. And she drew this picture on a piece of cardboard. And one side had a black head. And then in the middle was a golden head. And on the other side was a white head. She said, when I came in here, every thought was black and dark. And then I began to apply what we've been talking about, the gold. And now my thoughts are white and bright. And I will never forget that. That was her explanation of her life transformation in 10 weeks. That's all it took.
Wow.
Her brother was in the gangs. Her whole life was surrounded, you know, by the Sureños and the Norteños and the gangs. And here she was going through a life transformation because some crazy guy like me went down and sat down with her and some other teenagers who are just kind of chaotic at best and worked with them on some relationship principles. It just changed her whole view of what her life could be. So imagine one person in every county who connects in. We've got the training. All you got to do is connect them to it. It's trackable. It's auditable. That way the probation officers and the Department of Corrections get everything they need. Right? They need to know that it's accountable.
Right.
That it's not just somebody playing a game or gaming the system. We've got all of that taken care of so that somebody who's got a good heart of compassion, who's a good listener, who's got a stable set of life skills. Right? They're decently, you don't have to be a professional. You can be a professional, whatever you are. But you've got a stable family and you're willing to give of your time, your talent, your treasure for somebody else and walk with them. Many of these relationships I still have 5, 6, 7, 8 years later. They don't just go away. If I walk through downtown in that city, people will honk their horn. They'll pull over and talk to me. Their lives have been changed forever. In just a few weeks. And you know, you're not going to get that in a weekend seminar. Trust me.
No.
We do a lot of that. That's the stuff that doesn't work. Well, let's have a 4-hour seminar on Saturday or, you know, a 5-day seminar 1 week. No, we work week after week after week. People have to be able to take it, apply it to their life, come back and talk about it. And it's a process, not, you know, don't read a self-help book and go out and do it tomorrow. It's a process. and to walk alongside people and help them go through that process and make the new decisions. Like I said, many times I'll work with people for 6-9 months. They'll come into one workshop and say, well, what's next? And then they'll go to the parenting workshop. They go to the parenting workshop and then they go to the anger resolution workshop. They begin to change their life and they've never graduated from high school. And now they're accomplishing something that they get a certificate they put on the wall, walk into their probation officer and say, look what I did. They've never accomplished anything of substance that they can put their finger on in their entire life.
Man, and that's great.
We give them that dignity. We're handing out dignity and accomplishment and a sense of achievement that they don't know where to get it. And that affirmation that goes with it to look at them and say, great job. Well done. That they never heard from their father. We're a fatherless society. We are a fatherless society. And most people have never heard, I'm proud of you. I appreciate you. Good job doing this and getting it done. And we thrive. We're humans. We thrive on that. We need that. And so I'm looking for people who they can fund, right? Somebody gave me a $100 check this week. Cool. That worked. That helps. All right. Somebody's giving me $600. Somebody has to get those things are huge. It cost us about $1,000 to take one person through a 12-week workshop. The time investment, I spend personally 3 to 4 hours a day reviewing people's work. It gets exhausting. I say, I need about 20 people like that right now. But they're going to have to be trained. Because if everybody was doing this way, I wouldn't have to do this, right? We're doing things a little bit different. And it works. So people come in, they may have all sorts of training. They may be a psychiatrist. I don't know. That doesn't make them competent to go sit out on a curb with somebody and walk through in this manner. To be a friend, to be a mentor, to be a coach, to be there to cry with them, to be there to walk through some hardship with them, just to listen for that judgment in the trash can and just listen to people. And when they ask for advice, then give it. But until then, don't. And try not to give it anyway. Help them. You know, we give them tools that they can make their own solutions out of. Give problem analysis school. How do you work through a problem in a relationship? How do I get my goals? What's a goal? I mean, teach them what a goal is.
Absolutely.
How to set it and how to begin working on it and do it through life. Goal setting is huge. It underlines everything we do. We talk about goal setting. But most people don't set goals, especially in these communities. They've never set a goal. Their goal is to make it to the end of the week alive.
Right.
Survival. Their goal is survival. We're teaching them, how about having a goal of retiring? You have to understand, most of these people don't live past 55 and 60. Because of the health situations, the conflict, and all these things. So they don't know anybody who's retired.
Right.
And to look at that and say, Phil, you're 66. I said, yeah, and I'm okay. My bills are paid basically for the rest of my life. As long as, you know, I've done some things financially to prepare. And so I'm not going to just sit there and collect my Social Security and sit in some little hole. If the best things that they've seen is people who are in a little apartment with $600 a month and just barely living, that's retirement. Well, that's horrible.
Yeah.
And that's the next community that we want to get into, but we're going to work on this one first because that community is growing like 10,000 people a day are turning 65 and they don't have any resource. I mean, you and I both know people just don't have resource laid aside for that next step and they can't continue to work at the level that they worked. So we're really focused non-metro, rural, fixing fractured families, probation and parole community.
I'll tell you, Phil, for our audience and
we're really narrow focused.
Absolutely. And for our audience and our long-term listeners, as they're hearing your story be told, they know they know why you're one of our upcoming authors, and I'm extremely excited to publish your work and to spread your message to more and more people, because the more people that hear it and that know it, the more they can get involved. And speaking of get involved, if somebody is listening to this or watching this and they do want to get involved with Solem, whether it's to on the funding side or on the volunteer side or the any other way that they can get involved, I mean, what's the best way for people to reach out and connect with you and your team?
They just need to go to solemcommunity.net, S-O-L-U-M community.net. And there's a little tab on the bottom that says neighbor to neighbor. Because if you see that Solem leaf, right, there's two leaves on our logo. And in the middle of the leaf, the stem is a person. So the philosophy is we take what we have and we give it to help somebody else grow. And then they take what they have and they give it to somebody else to grow. It's a neighbor to neighbor proposition. That's what that logo is all about. So they just go to solemcommunity.net. There's a little tab down there that says neighbor to neighbor. It pops up and decide whether you want to volunteer and be involved, or decide whether you want to give and be involved, or do both things and be involved, or just subscribe to the newsletter. If you hang on long enough, just like every other website, it's going to pop up and say, hey, you want to be in the newsletter?
I'm in.
Be in the newsletter.
Man, it's so fun to have you part of our community, Phil, and this just the big Herculean task that you're going about with you and your team, and the difference you're already making, and I know it's going to continue to grow as you kind of continue to improve what you're doing, and also as you train others, as you said, to kind of pass the baton and to get more people involved and to get more people activated. So, I mean, great story. Happy to bring this to my audience. And speaking of the audience, I'll put the links to the website and all that good stuff in the show notes so that you can just click on it and head right on over and check out what Phil is doing over at Solem and really connect and to get involved. So definitely do a deep dive there. And if this is your first time listening to or engaging with Mission Matters, the Mission Matters platform, we're all about bringing on entrepreneurs, executives, and experts that really have a mission to share. Like, they're out there trying to make a difference in the world and in the marketplace. And they're bringing new innovative ideas and really going at it. If that is some type of content that interests you or motivates you or sounds exciting, we welcome you to hit that subscribe button, because we have many more mission-based individuals coming up on the line and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Phil, really, again, truly a pleasure to have you on the show, and I can't wait to bring you back on the show after the book is written and released so that we can announce it and also dive into your writing. So again, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.